Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
These verses out of Psalm 127 came to mind of this weekend for me. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, this past weekend, my wife and I, along with our children and grandchildren, went to a birthday party for Grandma. Mm-hmm. My wife's mother just turned 85, and just about all the family got together. It was a family that includes over 30 great-grandchildren.
Ooh, wow.
And they were, thankfully, no serious injuries.
That's good.
With
yeah.
all the kids playing in proximity. And it was kind of wild, but fun.
So everybody brought their full quiver to the party.
Yeah, that's right. It was an amazing time. Well, speaking of children, our guest today also has a quiver full. And six of her 10 children came by way of adoption. And so today we're going to talk adoption and all that's involved with that process. Mary Austin's former nurse, speaker, author, and an expert mom. She's mm-hmm. also a grandma as well. And you know, speaking of birthdays, you maybe just heard in the news, Billy Graham turns 98 today.
Amazing. Yeah.
Something? Wow. Here's a quote from Billy. It says, "When wealth is lost, nothing is lost. When health is lost, something is lost. When character is lost, all is lost."
Hmm. Very timely, too, with Election Day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right?
But I, you know, didn't know if I could really make a positive statement out of that because, you know, it, mm-hmm. the character is a little lacking kind of at the top of the ticket on both sides, isn't
it? Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, certainly thankful for the life and the character of Billy Graham. And, of course, Faith Radio's heritage includes Dr. Graham. He was the first voice on the air when our first station began back in February 1949.
So glad he offered that challenge to the students to come up with the funds to yeah. have the seed money to start.
Yeah, it's in Northwest. He was president of Northwestern Schools at the time, now University of Northwestern St. Paul, the owner of this network of stations that now stretches across the Upper Midwest and Hartford. And, you know, thanks to the app and online listening, it's around the globe. So, you know, wherever you're listening, welcome. Great to have you with us. We're always so appreciative, and if you're online, I always love to know that you're connected, and thank you for tuning in. Saw a lot of Hunters in their full gear this weekend.
Yeah, I was at the Vikings debacle yesterday and saw several Hunter Orange people dressed in the stands there. So
it was, you know, if you didn't get a chance, by the way, to sign up for that Duck Commander Faith and Family Bible giveaway, we're going to keep that form up for one more day here in our show page, the Connecting Faith show page, and give you an opportunity to register for the drawing for these Bibles from Phil and Al Robertson, the Duck Dynasty guys. So you can sign up at myfaithradio.com and then go to the Connecting Faith show page. And there's it's right on the rotator.
The rotator there, available in Hunter Green or Hunter Pink.
That's right. Yeah, so you can, if you're a hunter, or you love somebody who is, or if you're out there, in fact, I talked to a couple of gals who were going out with their dad.
Oh,
so
really?
They were out, you know, they were ready to go out and see if they could reduce the deer population, which is my car's in the shop this week, actually,
right.
as a result. So I was thankful for their efforts, and I wish them well. All right. Well, before we talk adoption, I want to hear from John Stone Street about a position that wasn't adopted in Canada, and that makes it a win for religious freedom. Here's the point.
A verdict for religious freedom up north. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Trinity Western is a Christian university in Canada, a country with whom we share a common border, a language, well, sort of, and legal tradition. So it's a big deal and good news that a Canadian appeals court ruled unanimously in favor of Trinity Western in its dispute with the Law Society of British Columbia. The BC Law Society, because Trinity Western's code of conduct upholds traditional marriage, refused to accredit Trinity Western's law school. That means graduates wouldn't be able to practice law in British Columbia. In its opinion, the appeals court said, a society that does not admit of and accommodate differences cannot be a free and democratic society, one in which its citizens are free to think, to disagree, and to debate and to challenge the accepted view without fear of reprisal. These are strong, true words, and this is a great decision. But the case will no doubt end up in the Canadian Supreme Court. Make no mistake, bar associations in the United States will be watching. I'm John Stone Street.
It's 9 past the hour, and you're listening to Connecting Faith. And today we have connected with Mary Austin, who's a former obstetric nurse, a homemaker, a speaker, and author. She's written several books, including Family Feasts for $75 a Week, A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family, and Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. And that's the book we're going to reference for our time together today. She and her husband and their 10 children live in Idaho. 4 of their children were born to them. 6 arrived via adoption from South Korea and Ethiopia. And Austin's been blogging about motherhood, food, frugality, and adoption at owlhaven.net for at least, I think, 10 years now. We are just honored to have Mary back with us talking adoption. And by the way, I was just going to say, as we welcome Mary to the program, that we're going to open up our phone lines right away. So if you have questions about adoption, or maybe there's just part of the process that is having you wondering, or you have someone in your family that's pursuing that, or just maybe want to share a bit about your story, and we'd be honored to just hear about your experience. So give us a call. The number is 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. Mary, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, this is, November is National Adoption Month, and you've got 6. Are there birthdays all in November just so you can have a special? No, that's probably not the case, is it?
No, my baby is turning 12 this month.
So oh, my.
She's my very youngest, so it's hard to imagine she's that old already.
Well,
she came home from Ethiopia when she was 6 months old.
You've been at this a long time and have done it multiple times. So I'm curious, maybe just to review your story a little bit. Do you remember how or where the idea of adoption first came to mind, and did it seem like just sort of a natural, reasonable idea?
Well, way back in 1997, we had 4 kids by birth, and we thought we were done for a while. But that was the year that my youngest son turned 3, and I realized how fast parenthood was going, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm just not sure if I'm done with this whole baby phase of life. And at the very same time, God was just really opening our eyes to the needs of orphans around the world. There were a lot of adoptions happening from China at that time, and I had a friend who had a little girl from China. And John and I started talking about it, and at first John thought, 4 is a great number. In fact, it's larger than average these days. But as we talked and prayed about it, we ended up feeling like it really was a path that we wanted to take for our family, and we just stepped out in faith. And Josh was our first adoption. He came home in 1998. He's 18 now. And Ben, also from Korea, came a year and a half later. And then Emily and Juliana came in 2004 and 2005. And they were also infants or toddlers when they came home. But then in 2007, we adopted a sibling group of 2 girls from Ethiopia who were 9 and 11 on homecoming. And so they're 18 and 21 now. So
you've got
a great adventure.
You've got a variety of ages and stages and countries, all those things. Did it get, in a sense, maybe easier as you went through the process again? And of course, the last time through, you adopted more than one at a time, which maybe is an entirely different way to add to your family.
Yes, absolutely. And I think when kids come home at older ages, they do tend to have greater challenges adjusting. And I think it was a great strength for them to have each other, as biological sisters. Their whole lives, they have each other. In fact, when they moved out in September of this year, they became roommates. So, they are still living together. But, definitely early on, it was hard for them to come to a whole new country, a whole new family. And there was a lot of grieving to be done and a lot of adjusting. And we had just as much to learn as they did, really.
Grieving and adjusting, was that the case for, any adoption? Is there a grieving process, a loss, if you will?
Certainly. Even babies who have no memory of their birth family will at some point during their lives as they mature and understand things more, have to kind of wrestle with this thought that their first family was not able to keep them for whatever reason. And sometimes kids can feel like it was some unworthiness on their part or something that they did wrong. Often children don't understand that adoption is done for adult reasons and not related to the child, you know. And so you have to be really ready to talk through things with kids and just really help them sort things out. I was just yesterday talking to my 14-year-old daughter, and we were talking about books we did like and books we didn't like. And she and I both confessed that we didn't like the book Anne of Green Gables, which is so many people love. And I had a reason for not loving it. And her reason for not loving it was it's an orphan story, and it kind of made her sad, you know. So there's just layers and layers. And she came home at 20 months of age and is beautifully well-adjusted and is doing wonderfully. And yet, you know, there is that little sadness lurking in there still.
Mm. Talking with Mary Austin today, she is a blogger, a former nurse, a homemaker, speaker, author of several books, including Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. And our phone lines are open for your calls. We talk all things adoption today at 877-93-FAITH. 877-933-2484. Mary, before we take a break, just curious, is there a, you know, this is a month when we focus on adoption, but what would you say the overall acceptance of or process of adoption? I mean, are there some, is it different today than it was, say, even 2 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago?
Well, adoption is always in flux as far as rules in different countries and just the logistics of adopting children. I think that one of the things that has improved since we first started adopting is just the deepened understanding of the need to support families and the need to support children, possibly in different ways than children who are born into your family. And there's a lot of great resources out there, and it's wonderful to think that families these days can go into adoption with more knowledge and with their eyes more wide open and with better preparation than possibly we did, you know, 15 or 20 years ago.
Well, coming up in a moment, we're going to take your calls, your questions, and talk more with Mary Austin. One of the big issues is the whole a conversation about attachment, and you talk about a whole continuum of attachment. We're going to jump into that. In fact, we're going to get to a call that addresses that question coming up after the break. And if you have a question on all things related to adoption, Mary Austin's the person you want to talk to. She's been there, done that, and she's written about it and still writes regularly about issues of motherhood and food and frugality and adoption at owlhaven.net. Mary Austin, the author of Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting, our guest today. The phone number is 877-933-2484. The story of adoption, of course, is that God showed us how that should go. He invited us in, adopted us as his children, and we're honored to talk about it today with Mary Austin. Mary shares encouragement with mothers through her books, speaking engagements, and her blog at owlhaven.net. She lives in Idaho with her husband, the youngest of their 10 children, including four daughters born in Ethiopia and two sons born in South Korea. We're talking today of Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. That's the title of one of her books. And one of the key areas, Mary, that you address is the whole area of attachment. And Lynn, listening in to Sioux Falls, has a question about that. Lynn, you're on with Mary Austin. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for calling.
You bet. I was wondering, Mary, if any of your kids dealt with attachment issues, and if so, were you able to find post-adoption support for them?
And Lynn, before we before Mary answers the question, do you have one or more children that are adopted?
I do. I have two daughters through adoption.
And what are their ages?
One just turned 24, and the other one is 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Mary, what do you think?
So you've weathered your way through the challenging teen years, too. That can be real hard, can't it?
Yeah. It sure is.
Yeah. We have definitely had various levels of attachment challenges with various ones of our kids. Our little ones, our ones who arrived at age two or younger, tended to be a little bit quicker to adjust, but at least one of those took a good year or so to settle in well, and we really had to focus on kind of treating him more like a younger child and carrying him around and just really, really working hard on those bonds, because we were playing catch up. And then with our older girls, it was even more challenging. You know, they had memories of their first mom, and I was not their first mom, you know. So it was challenging for them to accept me as mom for a while, and we went through definitely some challenging years. In my book, Forever Mom, I talk a lot about details of some of those challenges, but a lot of the battle for me was really to realize that I needed to parent these girls in a little bit different way than had been effective with our ones who were born to us or who came to us at very young ages. They had different needs, and I really struggled with helping them become attached until I realized I had to release some expectations and really keep them close and find ways to say yes unusual ways.
Say more, example, Mary. Give an example of just saying, how did you parent different, and what ways maybe worked for you?
Well, one of our battles early on was appearances, like what you wear to church. And it felt to me like a real basic thing to say, oh, yeah, we're going to dress up, we're going to look nice at church. But it was a really hard thing for the kids for various reasons, and I had to just realize where my priorities were and realize that the relationship was way more important than whether a kid wore jeans to church or whatever. And it sounds a little bit maybe silly or superficial, but in my many years of parenting, we had parented in a certain way, and things that were easy expectations with some of our other kids were not at all easy with some of the ones who came at older ages. So I had to release a lot to get what was the greater good, and that was relationship building. Regarding your question about resources and adoption support, I think that can be tremendously challenging. We talked to a couple of different counselors at various times, as well as adoption social workers, and got some advice, but I ended up getting a lot of support from online groups and parents of older adopted children and, you know, just people who'd been there before. Sometimes when you can talk to a counselor, it may be, at least in one of the cases that we sought out counseling, that counselor did not have as much adoptive parenting experience as we had. And so he was saying, okay, well, what about this book? What book did you mention is a good one? And so he was taking advice from us, which would probably help his later clients, but left us feeling like, oh my goodness, it still is hard to find the resources and support we need.
Lynn, do you have a good relationship with your daughters now?
Yes, I do. My oldest, both of them are in open adoptions. Our oldest one has dealt with it better than our youngest. Our youngest has dealt with attachment issues. And like Mary, I've had to drop my expectations. That's a very good way of putting it, Mary. And I don't quite so often ask God, are you sure you were doing the right thing here, you know? And drop those expectations. I embrace my position in my girls' lives. And And our youngest, I can't save her.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you called, Lynn. Thank you for your the good work that you're doing, and we do honor you for that, you know, embracing this position. So.
Yeah, and so often our relationship with our kids is going to look a little bit different than we first imagined, and that's okay. And it's a growing and changing thing. I know that my 21-year-old daughter, when she was 17 going on 18, it was really hard between us. But now, just in a few years difference, the relationship growth is huge, and it's so encouraging, especially when I have challenging moments with my 18-year-olds. You know, I think, oh, well, look at where we've come, you know, with our older daughter, and God is always at work.
Wow, a challenging moment with an 18-year-old? That sounds so foreign, Mary.
Yeah,
we thought it'd be done by then, didn't we? We were kind of hoping we'd get through it at 14, but no.
I know. Isn't that the truth? And you don't stop worrying about your kids even when they're 22 or 25.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, we got a couple minutes here before the break, but, I mean, obviously, you know, dealing with that kind of adjustment, those seasons when your adopted child isn't maybe attaching, that's – how do you kind of – what did you do to kind of keep your perspective and say, okay, I know that this isn't – you know, how I wanted the relationship, but, you know, and they're not attaching like I want. Did you feel insecure, inferior, those kinds of things?
Certainly. We all go through moments like that when parenting any child, you know. But I really clung to the verse that in the Bible that says, he who began a good work in you and in your child will carry it on to completion. And you just have to hang on to those promises from God and realize that this is a long-term thing, and that God loves our children even more than we do, and he's always at work. So there is hope even on the hard days.
Mary Austin's with us today. We're talking adoption today. November's National Adoption Month. Maybe it's something that you've not even considered. It may not even be on your radar, but I hope even just in our conversation today you'll be encouraged to open yourself up to the opportunity. And then if you're in the middle of the process or have experienced it, like, you know, Lynn, where your children are older, and there's still time to kind of look back and reflect. Talking Forever Mom today with Mary Austin. The subtitle of her book is What to Expect When You're Adopting. And she has done that. Her and her husband have adopted 6 of their 10 children. And she has learned a lot about how to feed an army, or at least a large group of children. She's also written A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family, and has all sorts of practical answers to questions about large and small families and adoption. Talking Forever Mom today. She blogs regularly at owlhaven.net. We'd love to have you join the conversation, too. We're going to talk more with Mary in a moment, but you may have a question or a story. I'd love to have you join the conversation. Here's our phone number. It's 877-933-2484. It's 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to use the email, you can go to myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email tab there. You can submit your question or comment that way, and we'll talk to you in just a moment. Stay tuned. There are millions, literally, of orphans in our world today who are looking for a warm, loving home. And there are many who are taking up that privilege, that challenge, that opportunity. Mary Austin has done that. She married her high school sweetheart at age 19. They had 4 children by their 8th anniversary. And then God opened their eyes to the needs of orphans all over the world and began their adoption journey. They adopted 6 children over the next few years from Korea and Ethiopia, bringing their grand total to 10. And Mary discovered that besides being a mom and a homemaker and a speaker, she was also a writer. And she's written several books, including Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. She writes regularly still at her blog site, owlhaven.net. And Mary, we were talking a little bit about attachment here just the past few minutes. Anything more we should say about that, just in terms of, because that is probably one of the key elements, isn't it? Just trust and love and bonding.
Absolutely. It's really huge. You know, there's a really great book that I kind of consider Forever Mom a companion to this book. The book is called The Connected Child, and it was written by Karen Purvis. It's available on Amazon. And she talks about attachment at various ages and phases and how it can look different at those different ages. You know, when you bring a baby home, it's hugely important to be the main nurturer of them, you know, carry them and hold them and snuggle them and feed them and just kind of keep those special times to yourself as your baby is learning to attach to you as mom and dad. Those things can really help. And then as kids are getting older and whether they're freshly arrived at home or whether they've been with you a while, it's also hugely important to remember the power of yes and find different ways to say yes to your child and all sorts of creative ways. For example, I know that as a parent, sometimes it can get easy to say, oh, no, you can't do this, or no, you can't do this today. But for example, if a child says, hey, can I have some ice cream? And it's 5 minutes before dinner, instead of saying, no, you can't have ice cream right now, you say, yes, you can have some for dessert for dinner. And that power of yes cannot be underestimated. And sometimes when a child is first arrived at home, they're testing every boundary, and it can be so tempting to, or you can fall into the trap of saying no oftener than you even realize you are, because you're trying to make those boundaries. And if you can just think of ways to say yes and to redirect a child in a positive way instead of a negative way, that can be hugely helpful for that attachment process.
Do your natural-born children sometimes feel some resentment or frustration if mom is parenting different or giving more attention to an adopted child?
Our older children were older than the adopted children when the adopted children first came home, and so I think that they had a greater understanding level than, for example, if you'd adopted kids that were the same age as kids you already had at home. So I think that what our kids gained the most from the whole experience is a tremendous compassion, because they saw some of the struggles of some of their younger siblings who were adopted. And not all of our adopted children have had great struggles, but we have had a degree of struggle with several of them. And our older children saw how hard we were working to connect and have really been part of the support system. I'm sure that there were times when we were occupied with the younger, newly arrived children, and the older ones, you know, felt sidelined, and we've talked through that at times. But in general, what I've seen in our children as they've grown and watched their younger adopted children grow also is just a compassion for the ones around them. And I think it's been, in general, a really good experience for the older kids as well as the younger kids. And the younger kids look up to their older siblings, too. Right. So that's a really powerful, wonderful thing.
Well, let's take another call. Trish is calling in from Champlin. Trish, you're on with Mary Austin. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, I had adopted a child who was an older adopt. I got him about 8.5 years old, and he has some significant concerns with attachment. And I'm just wondering if, would you suggest, or how would you even entertain the idea of possibly being able to adopt again with a child that could actually be a threat to other children?
Boy, I would really focus on that attachment with that child and see if you could help him get better settled before you adopt it again, especially adopting a younger child. In my connections in the adoption community, I know that There are families who have experienced great challenge with keeping younger kids safe if there's an older child who's really struggling. So, you know, you have to pray about it and see where God leads you, of course. But from a practical standpoint, I would want to focus on the healing of that one child and see if you could help him get to a better, safer place. It is definitely ongoing. It definitely takes years and years. And I want to give you a hug right now because I know what challenge there is when children are having trouble settling in and connecting well. And I also have had, we adopted our girls who are 9 and 11 when our other two daughters were younger than they were. So our younger daughters came home sooner, but then the older daughters came home and they were, thank God, always safe with younger children, but it was not always calm. And there were tumultuous moments that really grieved my heart because I wanted a more peaceful atmosphere for those little ones who were in our home. But God got us through and worked through it with us and taught us all a lot along the way. You know, he's walked with us every step. But it definitely, I don't underestimate the challenge of that decision-making point of thinking, oh, can we add more, or is this going to be safe, or is this going to work?
Tricia, thank you for your call. Mary, I mean, just know from Ron Deal at Family Life Blended, talked about, you know, blended families, it doesn't, yes. That blending doesn't happen, you know, quickly. So is it the same kind of time frame where it may, you know, be 5, 6, 7 years really before this kind of blending really settles in?
I know it can take a long time. In our experience with our kids, I think that some of our older adopted children bonded to their siblings before they bonded to us. And that was actually a great comfort because I thought they do have a connection with somebody in the family, even when they're still working on that relationship with us. And you know, that's family, and that's the kind of family that will support them years down the road, too. I know that some adoptive families have experienced just what step families experience, though, you know, where there are divided loyalties and some siblings get along better than others, and it can be challenging. It just takes a lot of patience and a lot of God's grace and a lot of just reaching out in love, even when a child is showing challenging behaviors. In fact, especially when a child is showing challenging behaviors, they're showing their need, you know, for acceptance and love.
Yeah. Frank is calling from St. Paul. He has a question about pursuing birth parents. Frank, you're on with Mary Austin. Go ahead.
Hi, Mary. I'm by the
Hello.
Way. It's a pleasure to chat with someone who may be a model for the movie Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yes, could be. Could be. The Idaho version is coming out soon, I'm sure. That's anyway.
Oh, dear.
I had the honor of adopting two children from South Korea several years ago. They're both adults now and moving on in life. But at various times, I think each of them have asked about the possibility of connecting with birth parents. And I did actually, in one case, you know, write a letter to the adoption agency, which never got a response. And is there some trick to doing that? And is it even a desirable thing to do?
I think that if a connection can be made, it's a wonderful thing for kids. It can be a grounding thing and really help them understand more of how they ended up where they are. It's not always possible, especially in South Korea, where especially the age that your kids are, many children were relinquished by single moms, and there's a real stigma there, and the moms may desire to protect their privacy. for in relationship to a future spouse or future children. That they say that in South Korea, you know, when in the late 90s, when we were adopting our boys, that it was similar to the stigma to unwed mothers in 1910 in the U.S. And so many moms do wish to preserve their privacy. But we, with our six adopted children, five of them have had contact with some birth family. And navigating those relationships can be tricky, but in each case, I think it has been good for our children. One of our South Korean sons got to meet both of his birth parents, and it was a great blessing. And then our four daughters, last year we brought them all back to Ethiopia, and each of them got to meet some member of birth family, and, you know, not always a mom, but extended family, and it was a real blessing. I actually wrote about that experience on my blog. If you click on the adoption tab, and it would be in August of 2015, I blogged all of our travel stories about visiting relatives in Ethiopia. And then also I think it was in 2011 that we visited our one boy's birth family in Korea. So it's been a really positive thing. And I've also heard from other families and adoptees who are adults that it is a really good thing to, if you can make those connections, do make those connections, because that's a precious part of their past.
Hmm. Mary, you just have a couple minutes left. Maybe just a word about where churches can be, how can we be more supportive? Extended family, just any words of advice, or maybe what you've been blogging about lately, what people are asking about, to just give some summary things.
Yes, absolutely. You know, not everyone is called to adopt, but everyone can do something to support adoption, whether it be to contribute to an adoption fund of a family who is in the process, whether it be bringing lasagna to somebody who just brought a child home. Possibly families may need kids driven to sports practices. Another really important thing to remember is that there are organizations out there that support families so that children do not need to be adopted. For example, Compassion International does great work with preserving families who are on the brink. There are also temporary foster situations where they need foster families in the U.S. To take care of kids temporarily while a birth family gets back on their feet and gets back to a position where they can raise their own children. There are so many ways to support children in need. I do hope that people would look around and just see where you can bless someone in your community who is working for the orphan.
Mary, keep writing and speaking on this important topic. We're glad to have you back with us on Connecting Faith. I look forward to chatting again down the road.
I'd love to. Thank you so much.
Mary Austin writes regularly at owlhaven.net, and she's a homemaker, speaker, and author. Books include Family Feast for $75 a week. I don't know if that still works today. I should probably read that one. A Sane Woman's Guide to Raising a Large Family, and Forever Mom, What to Expect When You're Adopting. And she's been our guest today on Connecting Faith. And speaking of food, we're going to talk a little food here in a moment with Lisa Marone making her regular Monday appearance. So we'll get to that in just a minute or two here on Connecting Faith.
Love takes you in, and everything changes. A miracle starts with the beat of a heart. When love takes you home and says you belong here, the loneliness ends and a new life begins. When love takes you in.
Now,
It's Jason Gray. We're going to hear from Jason in a little bit, here about 10 minutes on today's Making Your Life Count. But first, we always love the opportunity to get healthy, for heaven's sake, at least to head toward that direction. Lisa Marone makes a regular visit to here on Connecting Faith. She's a physical therapist, a professor, a speaker, and the author of 6 books, who is on a mission to encourage people to get healthy, for heaven's sake. And today we're going to talk a little bit about what we eat to start the day. One of the worst things you could do when trying to maintain or regain a healthy body weight is to skip breakfast, so they say. So Lisa says. So Lisa, why is that true?
Neil, our bodies are created so beautifully. If you look at our metabolism, it's very much like a campfire. And when we go to sleep at night and we go through that fasting time while we're sleeping, it's very much like our campfires have burned down to just glowing embers. And so in the morning time, we do our metabolism the best deal if we give it some food early in the morning. It's kind of like putting kindling on the burning embers, so we can stoke our metabolisms back into flame, so that when it comes time to put the logs of our lunch and the logs of our dinner on, we actually have fire to burn it up. And that's what we're looking at doing with breakfast in the morning.
So, I mean, and I guess we know, certainly from weight loss, talking, right, having an active metabolism is really a key, isn't it? So say more about that. I mean, just keeping that level up and engaged.
Yeah, it's really important for our bodies to be continuously being fed and continuously burning off what we eat. And so when we get up in the morning time, within the first hour or so, we really should start to eat some breakfast. Now, a lot of people will tell me, a lot of my patients will say, but I'm just not hungry. And I tell them, well, you just need to get over that, because that's something that you have to train your body. If you're not hungry, it's because your body's not used to breaking its fast until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. And then what we usually do, because we're so hungry at that point, is we will put things in our stomach like a donut, a muffin, a bagel, and those things are almost like putting paper on burning embers. They'll burn up so quickly, our bodies will quicken store that, and it's not energy that we get to live on. It doesn't have good lasting value for us.
Probably wasn't a good idea to have that donut here before the show, Lisa, now that I'm thinking about that. So anyway, I did have one of those this morning. I did have a good breakfast, though. So let's talk about the what do we qualify as a good breakfast? If we're not going to sort of grab and go that donut, bagel, muffin kind of thing, how should the day start? What's an ideal?
Yeah, you know, it's really important to look at food groups. We have proteins, we have fats, and we have carbohydrates. Now, carbohydrates can be good if they are whole grain carbohydrates, but they're not good by themselves. So just having a whole grain muffin or a whole grain bagel is not a good thing. We really need to have protein, which takes a long time to digest, and fat, and yes, I said fat, is a good thing to eat because that has a real long-lasting feeling of being satisfied and satiated. And so there's a lot of good fats. There's some bad fats, but, you know, if we eat them in small portions, that's a good thing. So I love to have eggs in the morning meal. I'm a big egg person, so and I also like variety, so I probably mix that up. Every other day I might have eggs. And so one day I'll have fried eggs. I might have some turkey bacon with them and a piece of sprouted grain bread. Don't just grab any bread off of the bread aisle. Sprouted grain breads are breads that don't have actual flour in them. They're made from sprouting grains, and those have about 100 times more nutrients than even vegetables do. So that's a great bread to have in the morning.
I'm kind of an oatmeal guy for breakfast. You recommend steel-cut oatmeal, right?
Yeah, you know, steel-cut oatmeal is something that if you are rushing out to work, that's not going to be your go-to oatmeal. But if you have a little bit of time on the weekend, it takes about a half an hour to make a pot of steel-cut oats. And then you can divvy that up into small little containers, pop it in the refrigerator, and then microwave that just real up quick in the morning. And why I say steel-cut oats is that most of us eat rolled oats. These are oats that have been kind of soaked and rolled out real flat and cut into thin little slices, and our body actually burns that up quicker. And the heat process that's involved in creating those oats actually breaks down some of the good nourishment that's in them. So steel-cut oats is just an oat that's been cut in half. That's why it takes a little bit longer to cook in the morning.
You know, you mentioned in your latest blog talking about a power pack breakfast that, you know, a lot of this can be done, things can be done ahead of time, hard-boiling eggs, for example.
Yeah, and you know what? They don't even have to be done by you. There's now in the dairy sections of most supermarkets, there are peeled hard-boiled eggs. They sell them about a dozen of them for about $2 or $3, and that is a fabulous go-to protein. You know, for a long time we were told, oh, don't eat eggs and eat only 2 a week, but they have completely reversed that. There is so much nourishment, even in the egg yolk for us, that it is good to eat those whole eggs. So having those on hand, or, Neil, just even spending a little bit of time. This morning I had another radio interview early, and before I got on, I had a bunch of mushrooms. I fried those up and just kept those for the week so that I can be grabbing some mushrooms and throwing those in with some eggs and a little bit of cheese and some spinach, and I can have a breakfast that I want to eat in the morning time, even though I don't have all the time each morning to prepare that.
You mentioned, you know, protein, fat, carbohydrates. What about fruit? I mean, should we be having a banana or orange or apple or something every morning?
You know, that's a really great question. We think fruit is really good for us, and a lot of fruit really isn't unless it's paired or partnered properly with other foods. For instance, you mentioned a banana. A banana is extremely high in sugar and does not have a lot of fiber. And so that's going to spike our blood sugar really quickly, and it's going to make our bodies produce a whole lot of insulin, and we're going to quick and store that high sugar level in our blood. We're going to store it away as fat. And so if you want to have a banana in the morning, I suggest a half a banana with about a tablespoon or so of peanut butter or almond butter spread on that, because that's that good, healthy fat, and that fat is going to slow down your digestion of that fruit. Now, apples and oranges, fabulous, because they have all of their fiber in them. And so those are great whole fruits that are not going to spike your sugars as much as, say, a banana or some berries eaten by themselves.
And just a reminder again that, I mean, it maybe seems counterintuitive, but skipping meals is not going to help us, changing our weight situation, is it?
It doesn't, because when you go into your next meal or late morning and you're starving, now you are going to overeat. And you're going to eat things that are not good for you, because you're going to eat things that your body knows are going to digest really quickly. And so you are going to run for carbs. You are going to run for things that are more sugared. And you will just eat more volume. So even if you are eating a healthy lunch, you may eat, 30% more because you skipped that morning meal. And so we basically should be eating a nice, hefty breakfast. We should, if you need a little tiny snack in the middle of the late morning, but then lunch, a little tiny snack, and then dinner, and then we really should stop snacking after dinner, because that's when our body is going into that fasting mode. It's also when we're usually not busy. So if we're sitting on the couch unwinding with a book or television or what have you, that's not when we need our huge load of calories to be put in our stomach.
Always good advice from Lisa Marone, physical therapist, professor, speaker, and author of 6 books, including Get Healthy for Heaven's Sake. Lisa, great to have you on again. Thanks for your good word today.
You're welcome. I hope everyone has a wonderful breakfast tomorrow.
Musician Jason Gray knows that God can work in and through the trials of life. And his faith in God and the encouragement of others have been vital for him. Hi, I'm Steve Douglas, and Jason shares his thoughts.
The people I admire the most in my life are people who have gone through great pain, and there's been something about that pain that has made them more tender and a better listener and less judgmental and more loving, more patient.
And Jason says he's learned a lot through life experiences.
This is my favorite reversal in the kingdom of God, that we have a place to bring the worst that happens to us. And if we bring it again and again to our Heavenly Father, He takes it and He turns it around and He makes something beautiful out of it.
That is exactly right. God can use even your painful life experiences for His glory. Do you want to hear more stories? Why don't you go to makingyourlifecount.com?
Hey, if you missed part of today's conversation, you can find that on our website at myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. Myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. Tomorrow, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. We're going to hear from Dr. Shannon Warden, who's co-authored this new book with Dr. Gary Chapman. It'll be a great conversation. Looking forward to talking with you then.